You're listening to the Cynic Radio Podcast. Now, your hosts, Igri and Cynic.
And you are listening to the Cynic Radio Podcast, and I'm your host, Cynic. And joining me, as always, and live on location from the city of Wakanda, my co-host, Igri and Ryan. And on this week's show, we get to review Marvel's latest offering, The Black Panther, because we are the Cynic Radio Podcast. Like, listen, subscribe. More importantly, let's figure out a way to protect our schools. This weekend marks the long-awaited opening from Marvel, The Black Panther. But did it deliver? Well, at recording, $235 million for the holiday weekend already taken in, and $450 million worldwide. That's tens of millions of people who've gotten in their cars, drove to the local theater, stood in line, bought tickets and $80 popcorn just to sit there and say no to division. Say no to the fringe and the sickness that causes people to post inflammatory and race-baiting things on social media. But was it any good? Let's see. IG, leading into this movie, how familiar were you with the Black Panther?
Well, I'm a nerd, and even as a kid, I read a lot of things that had Black Panther in them, including some just of the Black Panther comics themselves. So I was fairly familiar. Anything more recent, I'd kind of fallen by the wayside because I don't read as many comics as I'd like to anymore. Just time, work, family, and everything takes away from that. So I was familiar with a lot of things, but not as familiar with everything that was going to happen in this movie.
I'm not going to lie. I wasn't overly familiar with the character. I was more of a Spider-Man growing up. I loved Spider-Man. I was a huge Spider-Man fan. You know, I was into X-Men. I was into Deadpool, but I never really got as deep down the roster as the Black Panther. I knew who he was. I understood his abilities and his origin, but I was never really a fan. And I'm not going to put the onus on me. I think that's Marvel's fault. Because I really don't think they ever did enough with him to bring him into the mainstream. Well, now they have. Ryan, how important was this movie in terms of bringing diversity to the MCU? I mean, a successful showing by a mostly African-American cast and a highly rated blockbuster film.
So I really feel like Ryan Coogler had a really huge load on his shoulders, because he not only had to make a good, fun, entertaining Marvel movie, but he had to make one that was kind of culturally relevant, and that one that wasn't too heavy-handed or heavy-handed, that did handle the race issues that are within the movie and outside the movie, you know, handle it in a way that can be weaved into the narrative, you know, the story's trying to tell, and still make for a compelling, fun story while also kind of having some kind of a message.
IG, after seeing the movie, were you glad that they took the time to introduce him in Civil War, kind of an introduction? So, and do you think it was a fair representation of what we got in the origin film?
I actually was very happy that we got him in Civil War first. And what that is Black Panther isn't a front tier or even second tier character in Marvel. So there are a lot of people that may have an idea of Black Panther, but there's a bunch more that if you say Black Panther to them, are going to think of the 60s Black Panther Party. And this is obviously completely different things. So having a look at a character that is just amazing, right? And what they did in Civil War with him, he was amazing there. And to compound on that, they did much more things with him here, and he remained amazing. So I think this movie was able to build off of the strength of Civil War, which was great on its own. I mean, had your favorite Spider-Man in it, but a lot of characters in there. And one thing Marvel's been able to do is put together an ensemble that works, but also be able to build the one-offs that work just as well. So I think introducing him in Civil War was the right way to get him out. And then putting a standalone was of the utmost importance for that character, because he is very central as far as things going around in Marvel in general, with the stuff coming from Wakanda with the vibranium and everything. It's important that Black Panther is central to everything.
I think you make some fair points there. And I also like the way, I mean, we reintroduced Spider-Man. Spider-Man needs no introduction, but we reintroduced him and he was out there with everybody else and he was mixing it up and he held his own. But Black Panther actually stood out. If you look in the terms of power structure, the Winter Soldier owned Captain America in one-on-one combat most of the time, but the Black Panther stayed right there with him, fought him tooth and nail. So I thought that was a great introduction. I thought it was needed. And I think that it really did help the success of these movies. This particular movie this time out. What do you think, Ryan?
I think Civil War was a really good movie, but I don't think it gets enough credit for how it was able to introduce both Spider-Man and Black Panther into the story without, you know, and give them both kind of their own little origin stories without you know, spending too much time, you know, involving them, he was the standout in Civil War. And so I think that really helped set the stage for this movie, because we really knew that we liked the character. We loved the character design. We loved the way that he moved. So I think it really was a nice little springboard for us, you know, to kind of familiarize ourselves with the character and really like the character. And I was off the bat, I was excited, you know, because a lot of times when we get a movie, you know, whether it be, let's say, Chris Evans as Captain America or Chris Hemsworth as Thor, like, we kind of think, okay, that guy looks like the character. Okay, makes sense, but we don't really get to see them, so we have to wait for the movie to see it. And in this case, we got the preview, and we were all pretty happy with the preview, and obviously he didn't disappoint in this outing.
Well, on top of that, too, it's every time he talked, his screen presence was off the chart. He owned every scene that he was in. Like, you're like, oh, shit, what is this guy going to do now? What is he going to say now? I mean, he was a force to be reckoned with. But going back to what you said, IG, about Wakanda being important, I mean, if you look at the latest Avengers trailer, most of it's taking place in Wakanda. And not only that, they gave Black Panther, like, the drop the mic lines in that as far as evacuate the city, engage your defenses, and get this man a shield. The stage is set for Black Panther to be a huge part of the MCU going forward. But Ryan, let's talk Ryan Coogler for a minute. I mean, all your favorite directors now are named Ryan, apparently. From Hollywood standards, he's a fairly new director. We've mostly only became aware of him because of Creed recently. Did you think he was the right person for this movie? And were you surprised how well-rounded the movie was?
No, I think there are two movies. Obviously, Creed was really surprisingly strong. And but there's also Fruitvale Station, which is also a really good movie. And I think the important thing with those two is, you know, obviously Creed's not quite a superhero movie, but it, you know, kind of is. You know, Rocky movies kind of are superhero movies in their own weird way. And he obviously, you know, he did a great job with that, and he did a great job with kind of a superheroish type of character. And, you know, that kind of not quite, you know, huge budget, but kind of he had the right idea for kind of this big action movie, you know, with an underdog. And Fruitvale Station showed he was really able to handle a compelling story and deal with race. And so I, you know, and then just hearing interviews with him, and I, you know, I just like his approach to movies and approach to filmmaking. So I was really confident when they selected him as the director. I thought, okay, this is a guy. And I think we know the Marvel way. They tend to take directors who are kind of strong directors who maybe don't have a ton of experience, a ton of hits on their hand, and, you know, give them the keys, but, you know, they kind of direct them and make sure they get, you know, the Marvel things right. And so I was pretty excited when Ryan Coogler was brought on board for that.
Well, I think maybe Kevin Feige should maybe go over to Star Wars and take a look at that and look at their director selection and help them out a little bit. I mean, listen.
I disagree.
Listen, Creed was a solid movie, but it's nowhere on the level of this. I mean, with the special effects and with the cast and the cost. IG, were you surprised it came out as well-rounded as it was?
At this point, anything Marvel is doing with their MCU doesn't surprise me anymore. They've just churned out so many things. I'm waiting for the one to come that isn't good, and it hasn't happened yet. There have been ones that are less good, but they've all been good. I mean, even if you look at, like, the first two Thor movies weren't great, but they were still fun to watch, decent movies. And those are about the bottom of the barrel. Like, you throw those against almost any DC movie that's come out in the last 10 years, and they're still far and away better movies. And that's the problem, is that they can, I think it's not only the directors that they pick, and the directors are very good, they're doing a great job, but I think the production staff, the producers of the movies, stay the same for all of the different things. So the producers are the ones that are kind of, if the director tries to go too far off of the Marvel path, they kind of bring them back and say, you can have some of your flair, you can have some of your personality, but it needs to be in this zone. It they are all formulaic, and the formula is working. You know, it's like Coca-Cola at one point tried to change and bring out new Coke, and they realized they had to come back. So I think the producers are trying to keep Marvel from making new Coke, and it's working.
Probably the most critically maligned, fan maligned movie would be Thor Dark World. And that's still a fun, watchable movie. There's still some good points of Thor Dark World. If that's the worst Marvel can do, they're in pretty good shape. But at the same time, IG, we know Marvel's been extremely cheap with the way they deal with cast and crew. If Coogler finally becomes the next big director in Hollywood, should they pay him anything he wants to come back and do the sequel? At this point, he has to, right?
At this point, they absolutely have to. Don't you think so, Ryan? They got to pay him.
Yeah, I think he's in a special position where I think they, you know, again, especially given all the social relevance of the movie and the racial elements, I think, you know, you got to give it to him at least for the next one and maybe beyond that. I think he's just, yeah, I don't see how you take him out of this. He's done such a great job. Just as far as a filmmaker, I don't see how you take him out. But also with all the other things around it, I think it'd be a really bad move on Marvel's part to cut him.
We've recently talked a lot about soundtracks and how important they are with Stranger Things, with Glow. And Black Panther really is no exception. Using a strong original score and with a topping of a very heavy dose of the always great Kendrick Lamar. And by the way, I bought the soundtrack directly after leaving the movie. Ryan, did you appreciate the effort to strike the perfect balance between the rhythmic nature of traditional tribal music and the combination of more futuristic electronic music?
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting blend between your kind of traditional, you know, Marvel score and then traditional African music and Kendrick Lamar and kind of blending it all, the kind of electronic music at different times. So it was definitely a really interesting blend of music throughout. And I think he did a good job. It did stand out a little bit to me. Like, I think, you know, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think sometimes you want the music to kind of be there and guide you, but you don't want to notice it as much. And so I think part of the elements where I noticed it, I think I noticed it when, you know, it switched to hip hop. I could, you know, definitely notice that a lot. And there were specific moments when it happened. And then there were certain points that almost gave me like a Lion King feel, which I don't know if I loved or hated. Definitely not hated, but definitely gave me kind of a Lion King feel with the imagery and the music at different times. I don't know if you guys got the same thing, overall, I think it was a really good job of kind of managing the music throughout and really kind of help with the atmosphere of the movie.
Well, I think some of that might have been on purpose because it keeps things familiar, right? If things are familiar, things are safe, and then people are going to be comfortable watching it, right? Because they're trying to appeal to a much broader audience, right? You know, it's trying to get the people not of color to enjoy it as much as the people of color. And you have to put something out there that's going to make things feel good. Things feel comfortable. Things feel like you've been there before. And The Lion King obviously had very great success when it was out. Throwing that kind of feel in there absolutely helps bring it to a wider audience. And then keeping it new, you know, Kendrick Lamar is an amazing musician. So letting him kind of have some flavor in it, it works.
All right, IG, let's talk some villains. We got Ulysses Klaue played by Andy Serkis. He was Gollum in Lord of the Rings. He was Caesar in Planet of the Apes. And now he was the Supreme Leader Snoke, The Last Jedi in Star Wars. Is he the most famous actor in Hollywood that absolutely nobody knows?
Well, and I think you're going to start to know him because he chewed up scenery as Klaue. He was great. He did a great job. I mean, he's a good bad guy that you could all like Spider-Man. When you had the Vulture in Spider-Man, you could understand why he was being a bad guy. He was kind of that way a little bit. And just the way he acts, I love Andy Serkis and he's amazing. And actually getting to be himself on the screen once in a while is great. They need to do that a little more often because he is a very good actor. Yes, he's the best motion capture guy there is, but he is a good actor in his own right. So I'm glad he got to get his time now.
Yeah, I agree. I think I loved him. Obviously, love him as Caesar. I really liked him as Snoke. I think the only thing that sucks about Snoke dying is the fact that Andy Serkis, I loved the way he did chew the scenery up. And he definitely chewed scenery in this. And for the limited time he was in it, he was just fun. He was just a really fun villain. And, he definitely doesn't get the credit he deserves as an actor. I think he should have been at least nominated for an Oscar. You know, I don't think he should have won for Caesar. But anybody that can make you care for a CGI, you know, ape, deserves it. And again, he was awesome as a villain this time around.
You look at Lord of the Rings, you look at everything that he's done and you peel back the layers and that's him. I mean, at his core, that's him. That's his acting. That's his motion. I mean, everything they're doing is amazing. Everything he does is amazing. Everything he touched kind of turns to gold. But Ryan, they went out of their way to give him a sense of humor, to give him a personality, to build him up. And spoiler alert, just to kill him off. That was my only slight disappointment with this movie. Were you disappointed that they chose to kind of do away with the character?
I read a lot, read the comics growing up, but not a ton. So I'm not, and, you know, and then as an adult, I was never really not into comics as much anyway. So I think Black Panther wasn't something I was following very much. But at least from what I remember, he was a pretty major character. So it kind of reminded me of the what they did with the Mandarin and Iron Man. It's kind of like you take this person who's a major character, and with the Mandarin, it's like you kind of relegate him to a joke, and in this case, he, you know, you kill him off. I was a little shocked, but I mean, you know, really depends on what they're going to do with, you know, what they're going to do moving forward. So yeah, it was a little bit of a shock. I didn't, again, it was kind of the same thing as Snoke. Like, he chewed scenery and he was great, but he was still kind of one note. So, you know, I don't know how much of a loss it was, except that we got a fun scenery chewing character, you know, more that he does represent the major villain in Black Panther's story. So I was a little surprised, you know, that they got rid of him, you know, based on that.
Well, yeah, he could have been a reoccurring villain in other films. IG, after taking time to build him up, did you appreciate the way that they kind of did away with him a little bit unceremoniously?
Yeah, I did appreciate it because I it turns out he wasn't the main bad guy. He wasn't where the focus needed to be. It was there to build tension, and he did his job. He really did his job. He built it up. Tension was there, and you didn't need to keep him around. It was fine. I don't have any issue with it. And the only issue I have is that Andy Serkis needs more roles, but he can get more roles. It's not about this movie. It's about all movies he needs to be in. And I'm fine with him just getting killed off that easily and that quickly. It's fine.
Well, I've prophesized this for a while, and there will come a time in our lives that Michael B. Jordan is in every single film that is made every single year. And I think we just came a step closer from Wallace in HBO's The Wire to Creed, now this. Killmonger trained his entire life to avenge his father's death and end the oppression of his people. In most stories, he would have been a hero. IG, what separates Killmonger from comic book types like Batman, who play outside the rules?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. What I think separates him is the thing that separated him from Batman, right? Batman's parents died as a result of a crime. Killmonger's dad died as a result of a criminal. So I guess you can lead it that way, is that, you know, Killmonger's dad was doing things basically forbidden from Wakanda, and he was trying to get away with it, see what he could do. And Batman's dad was just trying to better Gotham. So there's a little bit of difference there. The main difference being that I can believe why Killmonger wanted to do what he was doing. It's another one of those things where, like the Vulture, I can get behind why he wants to be the bad guy. And it's not really the bad guy as far as he's concerned. I get it.
I love the Joker being just crazy and wanting to burn the world. But at the same time, I like a villain with some depth. And Ryan, I mean, the Wakandans took everything from him and just simply left him. More so, did it give his character more depth? And did you agree with his agenda?
Well, yeah, I think what separates him from Batman is framing. It was really that. Like, if you were to frame this movie different, he is the hero. No, yeah, he obviously plays it up. He does some evil acts that maybe Batman wouldn't do, but it really just comes down to how you frame the character. And otherwise, that's one of the really interesting things about the movie, and one of the themes that I'm glad they tackled, because, you know, you have this beautiful nation that advanced technologically, that's isolated themselves, and yeah, that's questionable. Like, is that really good? This really does make Killmonger one of the more, he is the most interesting villain that Marvel's come up with. I mean, you know, I would, you know, you could argue that Loki was one of the more entertaining ones. But besides Loki, I mean, this really solves a lot of their villain problem. I guess maybe, you know, Michael Keaton is another really great villain, but that's it. Like, those are three great villains in Marvel movies so far. And, you know, I think that, and he's by far, he's got the most, most development, most pathos, and again, if you frame it a little bit differently, he could be the hero very easily, and that's what makes his villain so interesting, and that's what makes what they did with the story so interesting, is that it wasn't black and white, and it wasn't, you know, there were layers to it, and part of kind of T'Challa's growth is realizing that his, you know, that what the way that they were acting and the way that they treated the country was not right, and that they needed to step away from being kind of this isolationist. And so that was his story, was learning that it took the death of Killmonger and it took his life kind of being wrecked to learn that. But that was really, you know, central to what the story was.
And if you think about it, they really had the same message. They just had different methods. They both realized that Wakanda needs to play a bigger role in things to come. But we'll get to that. So IG, Killmonger shows up, beats T'Challa in single combat, fairly, I might add, takes the crown, drops the mic, and him off the falls. Have we yet to see a villain in any of these films that doesn't cower when things get tough or doesn't hide behind henchmen? He's a get shit done, and there was no giving that guy, right?
There wasn't, and that's the thing, is he was leading his own agenda. He didn't really have anybody else except, I mean, there was that Wakandan guy from whatever tribe, right? The Hill tribe or whatever, that was there to get him in the door. But other than that, there was nobody there standing him up or even helping him stand up. He was doing it all on his own, and that's something that's unique to this movie. Most of the other ones have a team or a business or something that is giving them the power that they need to keep going, be it financial power or actual power. There's something else in the works, and this is all Killmonger. It's all his own. He put himself through the training. Yeah, he got some training from some other people, but you know what? A lot of people have had that training and not been as effective as he was. So when you look at everything, this is really his ability to be strong. And that's where you have to admire that character. And again, another scenery chewing actor in Michael B. Jordan, just doing an amazing job, and a villain that you have to like. You know, it's Negan-esque in the way that he puts it out there, is that he's got the charisma and everything that you have to like him. You have to like what he's doing. And I did. I believed it.
There was no support staff, no manipulation. He came in and he took what he wanted via pure strength. And there was a certain amount of intelligence that you had to be impressed with.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was one of the, you know, one of the really interesting things about his own journey. And it was so unexpected, is that he obviously, he was really smart. He did, you know, he spent his entire life, you know, think about the discipline that it took to get to where he got there, you know, finding his father dead and making a decision, you know, with his, you know, dead father, that he's going to, you know, he's going to find Wakanda, and he, you know, joins the military, becomes a SEAL, and kills his all the people he had to kill, and, you know, finds Claw, and goes through this entire journey, you know, that took, you know, practically decades to get to that moment. And then when he gets to that moment, he doesn't falter. He does it basically by himself. Again, you frame this slightly differently, and Killmonger's the hero in this movie, and we're you know, all impressed with how he was able to become the King of Wakanda so easily.
Yeah, it really wasn't much effort. And speaking of the King of Wakanda, I've watched Chadwick Boseman since 2013's when he played Jackie Robinson in 42, and I have to admit that I was thoroughly impressed with his acting ability. I knew at some point he would be a big time box office draw, and I think he really did in this role. But Ryan, where do you rate his portrayal of King T'Challa? As far as, where would you put him as far as Marvel leading men? Is he up there with Downey? Is he up there with Hemsworth?
That's a good question. He's definitely, you know, I don't think anybody's up there with Downey. I think Downey's in a league of his own as far as, you know, an actor and kind of how in sync he is with this character. But as a leading man, I think he definitely is up there with anybody else, certainly with Hemsworth or Chris Evans or any of them. I think as an actor, you know, I really like him. I do think the way the character was written was, you know, not, I think there are reasons for it, but that maybe he was written a little too perfect or a little too, you know, I'd read an article. It was a really good article on, you know, one of the minor critiques of it was that it didn't seem like he was fighting for much, and he didn't, I don't know, like even though he was fighting to be king, you know, multiple times in this movie, I think he could have gotten into another gear, you know, and so, but I don't know if that was maybe how he was written or the fact that, you know, he had such a great ensemble around him, but something about him was, it was like he, there was a level, a gear that he didn't quite get to that I know he's capable of. But yeah, I mean, as far as a leading man and as far as an actor, I think he, you know, he's great and he's perfect for the role. And realistically, he's probably going to be the one, you know, to usher in, you know, the next phase of Marvel. So, you know, I think he got the job done there. But like I said, I think there's a gear that we didn't see in this movie that I expect he can get to.
And you needed to save that gear for the next movie because this one was good as it was. If you used up all those gears in this one, where do you have left to go? And that's the thing. Like Robert Downey Jr. has always got that next gear. He is Iron Man. That just works for him. But you can't do that to T'Challa. You can't do that to Chadwick Boseman. You got to save a little back so that you have somewhere to go. I mean, I would put him third in the MCU as far as leading men. It'd be Robert Downey Jr. and then Chris Pratt as Star-Lord. Just the charisma he puts him at number two, and then Chadwick Boseman at number three. And it's not a far three. He's right pretty close to Chris Pratt. So don't take it the wrong way.
Well, and also, I mean, there were so many great actors in this, and Michael B. Jordan was phenomenal. And I think, you know, there were enough performances carrying weight all across the board that he could kind of sit back and let everybody else cut. You know, it's interesting because he was, you know, at times just, and I don't mean it in a bad way, but he was kind of the least interesting character for portions of this movie. And it was perfectly fine because we had just so many great performances and so many badass moments and funny moments and things throughout that he didn't need to carry the weight of this movie. So, you know, I think in that, you know, that's where I'm reluctant to like make, you know, I don't want to make it sound like a criticism, but I think we can't expect more from him. Definitely.
Well, what fun would it be if Hulk Hogan hulked up at the beginning of the match, Ryan? You got to say something for the end. The third act needs to, you know, be taken care of. IG, speaking about kicking it up a gear, we're sitting here with bated breath because The Walking Dead comes back next week. And The Walking Dead's very own Danai Gurira, Michonne, in my opinion, absolutely stole this movie. Did this kind of point out to you that how underutilized she is on The Walking Dead? And what were your thoughts on the badass spear-wielding Okoye?
Oh my God, she was amazing. You did get it. That was perfect. Between her and Lupita Nyong'o, they took everything. And the thing is, Danai just lived that role. She was, first of all, she was beautiful with no hair. I thought that was an amazing character choice. Because, and even when they made fun of it, when they put a wig on her to put it in, she's like, I hate this thing. It was hilarious. She was funny. She was charismatic. She was a badass. And she just ate up everything she was in. I mean, she showed that she has to, by oath, and she believes in her oath, like defend the king. And since Michael B. Jordan was no longer king, T'Challa was no longer king, she stayed on the side with Killmonger doing her job. You know, so the character had depth in it that I really enjoyed. And I just can't say enough things about her. And I'm hoping that all of those people over at The Walking Dead watch this 2, 3, 4 times and maybe get some ideas on how badass Michonne can be, because they're not even close. We all thought Michonne was a badass until we saw this. Oh my God, she is so awesome. Couldn't have done better. Her and Lupita blew this away. I can't say enough about Michael B. Jordan and Chadwick, but you know what? The ladies stole it in this movie.
Oh, there was one point in the car chase where she threw her spear through a car and crashed it. Ryan, should The Walking Dead be looking into getting rid of that damn machete and giving her a spear? Because she was like Michonne ate Michonne in that fucking role.
Well, it's funny. The day I saw the movie, I was listening to an interview with her, whatever they changed the name of the Nerdist to. And, you know, I know she's a playwright and she's obviously a great actress, but you really like there. I don't, and then seeing the movie, it's like, what are they? They're not utilizing somebody who could be like, you know, the best character in the show. I mean, she's such a good actress. She's intelligent, physical when she needs to be physical. Like, what? They're missing something there, and they need to figure it out because, yes, she was you know, between her and Lupita Nyong'o and Letitia White, I mean, they almost didn't need, he almost kind of thought, like, do we really need T'Challa? Like, they've got this. They could kind of do, you know, he could kind of just hang out and let them protect him. Like, they were amazing, you know, in the movie. And that's also why, like, he could kind of sit back a little bit and he didn't need to carry the load, because he had the, you know, just these amazing actresses who were just as badass and just as fun to watch. And you know, it never felt like, oh, look, they're just making, they're just forcing these badass women down our throat. It's like, no, they embodied it. Like, they embodied the physicality, and it really felt like they were that, you know, they were that good. So yeah, it was awesome.
I love the fact that they surrounded him with strong women, and you're right, they could carry a film on their own. Between them and Angela Bassett, they were interesting, they were complex. The sister was extremely funny. It really worked all facets for me. But Ryan, what did you think of Wakanda as a setting? I mean, it was the jungle, and they tried to keep it looking more like a kind of an African city, but it was real futuristic. Did Marvel outdo themselves? And I mean, will they ever be able to recapture anything like that again?
So I thought it was really, really amazingly done. Between, again, the visually, you know, the architecture looked really cool because it was kind of like new and old. It felt like a lived in world, you know, even the setting where, when he, you know, where he kind of, his ceremony to become king, that was amazing. And the only thing which I hope we'll get in future movies, like, obviously you can't get everything in one movie, is I'd like to see more of, like, Wakandan life. Like, we saw a lot of external shots, a big wide angle shots, but I'd love to see, you know, what are their stores like? Like, what are their, you know, what's life like for the average Wakandan in this, you know, hidden city? Like, I just want to know what, you know, do they have sports teams? Do they have, you know, club? Like, what's life like there, considering that they are isolated? So I think I'd like to see a little bit more of that, because we, you know, we got the big, you know, grandiose shots, but we didn't get some of those more, you know, intimate things. So it's something I'd like to see in the future. But otherwise, I thought it was really fully realized, and more so than almost any other of, you know, any Marvel movies taking place in a somewhere, you know, that doesn't really exist. I think they really did a great job of making that world feel real.
Well, they got to have HBO everywhere with all the technology going, right? Everybody's got HBO. I mean, they're the most technologically advanced place on the planet. So they got to have good internet and HBO. I mean, they're the reason that, like, we all think our internet sucks is because someone out there has great internet, and it's Wakanda.
Wakanda, Game of Thrones. Like, let's say, like, do they have their own, like, you know, do they have their own Broadway and their own TV shows, or do they just watch our HBO? Like, I want to know that. I want to see how that works.
The rest of the world does, so I'm guessing they do too.
Well, one thing that they do right is tech. The high-tech suits basically stored in a necklace to the ability to use save up kinetic energy and use it at will. IG, where, in your opinion, where does that put his equipment? Where does that put Black Panther as far as superhero lore?
Well, you know, I don't think that his suit was the badass that it was initially back in early Black Panther, but I like the change. I do like the change because I think that it humanizes him a little bit, kind of gives him if he didn't have the suit, he could get more hurt. And so I do appreciate that some of it is the suit, some of it is the heart-shaped herb, but there's a little bit of both going on, and the vibranium is doing a lot for Wakanda as a whole. So I think the technology being in there, and basically what the way I gather it is, the technology from Wakanda is going to dwarf everything that Tony Stark has done thus far.
Oh yeah, I can't wait for the moment where they take him there and they show him that they have a flying railroad underneath the city and they can virtually just basically do anything. I wasn't crazy at first when I saw the purple in the suit, but once I got an understanding that basically he's going to be fighting somebody that's in the same exact clone suit, you needed some way to kind of make a distinction between the two. So I did like that, or it would have just been two of the same, like two twin brothers fighting each other. But I also like the ability he had to store up the kinetic energy and kind of use it as a weapon as well. I thought that was extremely funny the way they introduced it, and I thought it was extremely useful. Now, him being what seemed like completely impervious to kinetic energy, I don't know about that, but I did appreciate the suit and I appreciated the tech.
Another nitpick, only because it may have implications down the road, is you know, vibranium is this kind of MacGuffin now. It's like this magical cure to everything. It can cure gunshot wounds to the spine. It can, you know, it can give you superpowers, you know, it so that's the issue, is, you know, is vibranium just too powerful? It's like the Superman problem. Like, is, you know, Superman's all powerful, and if you have something all powerful, now you have to come create these convoluted ways to kind of, you know, fight it. And I guess part of the thing with vibranium is if it gets into the wrong hands, obviously, you know, that's a problem. But I think, you know, my only issue is, you know, how do you pull back some of the power of this? Because it does seem like it, you know, it can do everything. Like, anything you want to do, it'll do. And that could be problematic moving forward, you know, with, when it comes to kind of creating these, you know, stories.
The rest of the powerhouse cast included Martin Freeman, Angela Bassett, Forest Whitaker, Danny Kaluuya, Lupita Nyong'o. IG, could this be the deepest cast of all time, not only in a superhero movie, but in any movie anywhere? I mean, outside of a Scorsese flick.
It's very, very deep. Oh, my goodness. It is so deep. I mean, and it's stacked. I mean, this is like the New York Yankees of movie making, because they just stacked their lineup. And it's, you know, or Cleveland Cavaliers, if you want to go that way. You just stack it. And it's fine because it works. And nobody in this, what I saw anyway, nobody's fighting for power from each other, which is wonderful, right? They all took their role, knew their role, and were fine with their role. And I loved it. And if they can learn anything from this, and what I think Marvel and Disney have been able to do with this stuff is make going and being a superhero a viable thing for big name stars to do for fun, but still make it interesting, watchable, and have a message. And that's what I appreciate from Disney and Marvel, is that they're not just putting out popcorn movie. There's usually some type of message or some type of meaning in this stuff. And they are serious movies with some lightheartedness put in them. And you can't ask for anything more than that. You're getting big names wanting to go do this because of how well Disney has done it. So kudos to Disney for that.
Well, despite the message in the strong themes in Ant-Man, I'm always going to make fun of people under 5'5". I don't care if it hurts their feelings or not. I'm going to ask them how the weather is down there. I'm going to try to get them to go into small places just because I find it hilarious. But Ryan, speaking of special effects and even some of the fight choreography that we saw in the movie, did you notice the body transformation with Chadwick and Michael B. Jordan after they took the route? Did you notice that it was suddenly looked like that they were three times the size that they started?
I didn't notice a major size difference. I just noticed the kind of rubberiness of the CGI. So I think the other kind of complaint I would have of in the movie is that the CGI, just when they were in the costumes fighting at points, didn't work because it just looked clearly like they were in CGI. But otherwise, I didn't notice it didn't occur to me like a massive change in kind of stature while it was going on.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ryan. My one major complaint about anything in this movie, the only major complaint I have, is the use of CGI, because like the end fight and that, it just looks CGI. And I understand that trying to get people to look real and do the maneuvers they were doing is difficult. But like the rhinos that they used looked CGI. You know, there were just too many CGI elements that I think they could have gotten away from some of that and still had a great movie. The fight, probably not. That was going to be there, but maybe, you know, there's a CGI budget. There's so much money that they have. They could have taken away from other places and put them in that to try and beef up that. And it's a minor complaint because I still love the movie. That's my complaint with this movie, is that the CGI needed some work.
Well, with the hopes that you guys stayed for the credit scenes, I want to ask you a couple questions about that. IG, the mid-credit scene was basically the Wakanda coming out party. Did it remind you, or was it reminiscent of Tony Stark's I'm Iron Man scene when Black Panther basically stood up there and said, "We're going to help the world," and they kind of snickered at him? Were you waiting for him to say, "I'm Black Panther, bitch," and just walk off?
Or waiting for him to bring in a cart full of vibranium, about 3 tons worth or something? It's like, what are you going to do for us? Oh, well, we can fix spines. We can do this. We can do that. You have no idea. But it was basically a Tony Stark moment, because he had that smirk, like, "I'm about to tell you what we can do for you, son. We got this."
He's about to drop some knowledge.
I did. And he'd have had to pull that mic off and just hang it out to the side and let it go, because Wakanda, nobody knows, because they've done such a good job of hiding themselves. And, you know, that was what was pushed, is that maybe they shouldn't be hiding anymore. Maybe they shouldn't sit in the back and just let things happen. Maybe they can change the world for the better. And I like that message. I like that, you know, if you have something, let's go forward and let's do it.
Despite the rhinos, the more unbelievable thing to me was the fact that Wakanda could keep their secret for how many hundreds of years now? I mean, they're way ahead of everybody. They're basically Carl Lewis to everybody crawling, and nobody brings a word of this to anybody. Like, oh yeah, we got flying subways over here. They're free Netflix for everybody. Somebody would leak. Ryan, we also got to see Bucky Barnes living amongst the Wakandans. They're referring to him as the White Wolf, which is a completely different character in the comic books. What do you think is more likely here? They're going to combine him as the character into the White Wolf, or that was kind of a hint for the next movie that we possibly see the White Wolf in Black Panther 2?
Yeah, I wouldn't know the answer. I think it's kind of a fun name for him. I would assume it being Marvel, they'll probably find a way to combine the characters. But yeah, I'm not sure where they'll go with it. I guess we'll find out more in Infinity War.
IG, do you think we end up seeing Sebastian Stan in... If it's providing everybody survives this Infinity War, do we see Sebastian Stan in Black Panther 2?
Yes. Yes, I hope we, and I hope we do. I think they would be a good Batman and Robin, as it were. You know, you have the Black Panther and the White Wolf kind of going off and doing things. And I could see where Bucky at that point would be basically completely loyal to Wakanda because they gave him his life back. I mean, that's what I got from that scene is they did something to him to allow him to go back to being Bucky. He wasn't the Winter Soldier anymore. I mean, yeah, some of the actual things that happened to him to change his body and everything, that's accurate, but not his brain anymore. Now he's Bucky. And I appreciate that, and I think that that's going to lead him into being basically, you know, the right-hand man to T'Challa. At least I'm hoping so. I think that could be having Black Panther and White Wolf as a team, but obviously Black Panther first and utmost, just because all along the Black Panther is a stronger character than the Winter Soldier anyway.
After action and suspense, we finally get to the final battle, Ryan, and it includes a last-minute rescue from the Hibari Drive and freaking armored rhinos, and everybody's going at it. What was your thoughts on the final battle, the movie, and your rating?
So I thought the final battle was really great. That third act caught me out of nowhere. The movie was great. I loved the beginning, and I loved how it took its time and set up that world. And, you know, I love the middle where they take that little detour to Korea. And when Michael B. Jordan gets to Wakanda, it totally throws everything for a loop. I just didn't expect it. And that really got me invested kind of emotionally. I think the first two acts, I was kind of, you know, I was engaged and I was loving what I was seeing. But I was liking the themes, but it was a little, I won't say it's superficial because it was starting to tackle some of those interesting themes. But I think really him getting there just changed everything. And that final battle was just a lot of fun. Again, we got to see just how badass Lupita Nyong'o and Danai Gurira were, and the fight between them was good. When they were fighting, it was great. When we was CGI heavy, it was not. But I think it really ended well. This movie, my biggest fear going into the movie was that it would get great reviews because people would feel obligated to give it a review. You know, the first big Marvel movie with mostly black cast, black director, such a big kind of cultural moment, that my fear was that, you know, the reviews would be phenomenal and then we'd get a mediocre movie because, you know, kind of almost, you know, people wanting to be PC and not wanting to be that one person to say something bad about it. So, you know, but seeing it, I mean, it was everything, you know, I could have expected for it. I mean, it was phenomenal. You know, it hit all the notes for a Marvel movie. But again, thematically, it was just great. I mean, the way that it tackled, Wakanda's isolationist and the way that, you know, we got a really compelling villain who had a real reason for what he was doing. And again, the performances were amazing. And it was just such a really layered, it's a layered movie and something you can really think about and you want to see again. And, it was just interesting because, you know, while it also dealt with race well, it also kind of showed us that, you know, you get, you know, Wakanda is just one bad, you know, monarch from being like North Korea, you know, and so it has these really interesting kind of racial, cultural, and political questions. So, you know, I loved it. I thought it was a great movie, and it makes me really excited to see, you know, what comes up next. You know, I had a couple minor nitpicks that we talked about, but that was nothing. I mean, this movie was phenomenal. To me, easily the best Marvel movie, you know, up there with The Dark Knight, as far as, you know, being the best kind of comic book movies. And yeah, I would give it a 9.5 out of 10. I think it was really that good. And it was a phenomenal achievement considering everything, you know, that Ryan Coogler had to get right for this.
The casting in this movie gets a 10 from me. The story from this movie gets a 10 from me. The director gets a 10. The production staff gets a 10. Everything except the CGI gets a 10. CGI brings the whole movie down to a 9.5. That being said, they can't do any better than this. So I'm wondering where Infinity War is going to go. I mean, are they going to throw out a 7 movie at us now? Because it's like, well, we gave you Black Panther, so just deal with this. I don't know. I'm hoping that they find a way to get even better in the future. But this movie was amazing. There wasn't a weak actor to be had in the whole thing. I guess if I was going to pick one, it'd have to be Forrest Whitaker, who did amazing in this movie. How do you pick Forrest Whitaker as your weak actor? This movie blew me away. I was expecting a good movie. I wasn't expecting this. I loved it. I loved every moment of it. My wife loved it. My children loved it. It's great. It's so good, and I can't say enough good things about it. I mean, kudos to Ryan Coogler and kudos to Disney for realizing that the potential was there to take the Black Panther and put him out front for everyone to take a look at, and writing an amazing, amazing movie. So yeah, for me, 9.5, and I loved it. The final scene was my weak point because of the CGI fight, but it was still fun to watch. I loved it. Love the whole movie.
I give the CGI a firm pass, as far as I don't want the cast and crew playing with armored rhinos or jumping in front of hover subway cars. So, you know, it is what it is. It's never going to be completely perfect. It was kind of like Tarkin in Rogue One. I mean, it suited its purpose. They did the best they could with it, so I'll give it a pass. But for the first time in a long time, I left the movie not going, wouldn't it have been cool if, because I couldn't think about anything about this movie that I would have changed. And it could have been any type of movie, and it was that compelling. It didn't need to be a superhero movie. It could have been a mystery suspense. It could have been any type of movie. And they just did that good of a job that I would have enjoyed it either way. But I'm proud of superhero fans everywhere for coming out in masses. I mean, record-breaking masses to support this movie. Because geekdom doesn't know color, it doesn't know race, and we all deserve a seat at the D&D table. From the special effects to the music to the strong casting and the great fight scenes, this is as perfect a movie as we're going to get. And like IG says, I don't know how they top it for the next, for Infinity Wars. I give Black Panther a 10, and I agree with the masses all over the place. Wakanda forever.
And that's going to do it for the CRP's review of Black Panther. We loved it. We're going to give it a 9.85 from all three of us. You should go see it. Wakanda forever. Next week, we'll be back with The Walking Dead Underground. The Walking Dead returns, and we can't wait to bring it to you. Thank you for all your love and support. Continue to like, listen, subscribe, and share with all your friends. We'll keep bringing it to you if you keep listening. And until next time, don't get captured.
Follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and at cynicradio.com. Available for download on iTunes.